5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Okay.
Welcome to episode 213 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is my passion. The only Pimpcast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture preparedness and practical living. Well, so I'm flying solo tonight. Michelle and I are really trying to catch up on a bunch of things, but maybe I'll cover some of that here in a minute. This episode, as always, brought to you by Hickory Ridge Soap from twooldcrowshomestead.com. Turn that simp into a pimp. Bam! Peaceful Valley, 10% off with promo code PERMA. Handle all your preparedness needs. Oh, I'm reading the previous ad. Well, I don't read anything, y'all. This is right from the top of my cabeza. Anybody wondering about those seeds we plant out in the food forest? Well, you're wondering where we get them from. Peaceful Valley is the place. 10% off with promo code PERMA. Also, you want to tip a pimp, you can do it on a fountain app. You can listen to all your podcasts over there, even triple up the speed. And if you want to drop a derivation of Bitcoin up to a couple of players over there, well, you can do it in the form of sats or satoshis. So drop a SAT on a PIMP. All right. So farm news. Oh, my goodness. Where do I even start? Well, folks, I mean, there's no way I'm going to be able to get around the latest of what's happening in the world, because to a certain extent, I guess it does matter, but it really doesn't matter in the greater scheme of things, not in the most important parts. Remember, if you're on a firing range, and I think I told this story before. I remember shooting 40 out of 40 on a firing range back in when I was in the Army. And, that's pretty good. You know, most people don't shoot 40 out of 40, but I did. And I told this story before about how I remember getting up out of the foxhole when it was all said and done. And one of the sergeants, I think it was a specialist at the time. I don't recall. I'm pretty sure it was a specialist. Anyway, he says, good shooting there. But I got a question for you. When the 300 or the 250 meter and the 50 popped up, you shot the 250 first. Why? And I was like, because I knew the 50 was easy to do. He says, well, you're firing like a competitor. You're not firing like a soldier. And I remember at the time being a young guy and stupid, full of myself almost certainly. I remember thinking I was irritated at the time. But later on, as I became a little bit wiser, it made all the sense in the world to me. Because if you were in a battlefield scenario, there's no way you're going to shoot at the lesser threat, which is at 250 yards or meters rather than shooting at the 50. You would shoot the 50 and then worry about the 250. I did the opposite. And that is not the way, that is not at all the way we ought to govern our lives. So going back to the things that are going on in this world on a federal level, I had a really good conversation with a guy at a post office. I don't want to say his name or his position or anything like that. Don't want to get him in trouble. being consorted with a cast of characters that I bring on here, you know, can't have that. You know, he pointed out something, and he's right on the money, is that everybody's worried about what's happening at a federal level, but how many of us really know what's even happening in our own town council? For example, I live in a town where we have got a college. I don't live in the town, obviously. I'm living out in the county. But in the town, you have a college, and it's, you know, the college is pretty full generally, except for summer break, which we are on right now. And you got a college town, but there is not one part of this town that would lead you to the conclusion that not only is it a college town, it's off of two major thoroughfares. You got I-26, you got a highway that goes up and down there, and this place has absolutely no restaurant worth eating at and has no nightlife to speak of for a college group or anything like that. Now, I understand it's a Baptist university, but the whole reason why is because you have an old school town council that won't allow, I mean, it's like, yeah, I'm sure they call themselves conservatives, but at the end of the day, they're really kind of communists in how they run things. Well, people are worried about what's happening at a federal level. Meanwhile, in your own town, you can't even have suitable commerce in a place where it should be blowing up because people are more focused at a federal or state level when we really ought to be focusing on the local level. So, going back to this thing at the federal, maybe national, even world level, I got to cover it. I at least got to gloss over it to a certain extent just to kind of, because people are going to email me, ask me what I think about certain things as if that matters. I'm just going to tell you right off. Shakespeare said it best. The world is a stage and we are all mere players upon it. That's really what I think about everything that's going on right now. If you see it on the mainstream media, and Fox News is one of them, don't be fooled. Fox, CNN, MSNBC, you name it. If I see it on any of those, and worse yet, when you see it coordinated, you ought to know there's something going on. And then some of the local stations, you see that very same thing. Whatever they tell me, it is considered a lie until I find out otherwise. I am dead serious, y'all. I don't care. People are asking me left and right, what do I think about this and that? And I'm like, okay, I'll put it this way. If you were a combat veteran, and somebody just shot at you and you survived, you would not be wagging your fist in the air, especially when the threat could still be there. You don't know if there's more than one, whatever the case. All I know is the thing stinks to high heaven. And for anybody out there that's asking, look, I'm not a Trump fan, not a Biden or a Harris fan. I'm not a fan of any of these people. I know they're all polled cats. And I know there are, if you look close enough, you can see the puppeteer strings on them, because every last one of them are controlled. So instead of worrying about that, something that you have almost no control over, you do, in fact, bear a great deal of control regarding the things that are happening in your town, in your house. You know, years ago, I used to be one of those people. I had less understanding of what was happening in my son's life at a period of time. Then it's embarrassing because honestly, I was missing the mark in so many different ways, working too much, not being the man I should have been, so many different things. And the Lord has blessed me despite my shortcomings. But I got to tell you, I mean, I myself years ago was one of these people I'm talking about. So it's all there. But folks, I'm just going to tell you, I'm going to say it probably more than once. They have got to change the narrative and they got to keep changing it. I mean, think about this. Just think about how quickly the narrative changed. It went from an assassination attempt, supposedly, to Biden picking whatever, and then a giant cyber outage. And almost nobody is even talking about the first one. See what I'm saying, y'all? They got to keep it moving. And I'm telling you what, let enough people start asking or raising questions about some of this stuff, I'm wondering if something might happen at the Olympics or some other great calamity. Folks, they have got to ramp it up. The powers that shouldn't be. So that's all the more reason. This is why I've been telling you, and this is why we end our show with Stay Alert, Stay Alive. But this is why I've been telling everybody why I've been doing the videos I have for the longest time. You know, I saw this unfolding years ago And if you look at the theme of our videos, you'll always see a preparedness component in it. But right now, y'all, not trying to make anybody scared, but I'm just here to tell you, you should be making it your top priority to put back food, put back water, put back weapons, beans, bullets, or as Gerald Celente says, gold, guns, and a getaway plan, because it's really getting real and almost nobody cares. Nobody cares. I mean, at exactly the same time, now here's where you got to have a wider view. Here's what people don't realize or don't want to talk about. At exactly the same time this thing was unfolding at the Trump rally, well, I mean, Israel was carpet bombing Gaza. I mean, if you look at what's coming out of there, man, it is absolutely dreadful. But that's happening over there, and nobody knows anything about it. And all of a sudden, if, let's say, some great calamity happens, I don't know, at the Olympics or whatever the case may be, they blame it on, let's say, Iran. It doesn't even matter. They'll blame it on Iran, Russia, whoever the boogeyman is they want to create. But folks, instead of being focused entirely on that, you know they're going to pull something. They're probably going to pull a lot of something. So get your stuff on lock right now. Don't be one of those people who waited for it. Never, you know, every single time when I grew up in Oklahoma, I never understood it for the longest time. You know, an ice storm is coming. And if you know anything about growing up in places like Oklahoma and Kansas, when the ice comes, man, it is worse than the worst snow event than you can ever imagine. And even back then, people would buy toilet paper. I'm deadly serious. Even back then, even as a kid, we're wondering, what on earth? You're worried about that? Remember, same thing happened with COVID. Folks, I didn't mean to belabor this, but it's important that you really, that I honestly beat it home that things are getting real and you have got to be prepared. And of course, like I said, that means a whole lot of different things for a lot of different people. For everybody out there, it's going to mean something different. But don't be focusing at the big stuff. That's what they want you focused on. Look at the other hand. Look at your hand. Look at your shortcomings. Do you have alternate water? Do you have storable food? And it doesn't have to be all this highfalutin stuff, y'all. We did a video a while back, how on, what was it, $100 you could feed yourself for 70 days. Now, granted, with the inflation out there, I doubt you're going to get 70 days out of it, but that's still doggone respectable, whatever it is. So be thinking outside that box. I won't beat that one anymore. All right, so some other stuff going on around here. Digging comfrey. And folks, that's another one of those things. I told you before, and I've said it seems like an awful business plan, but my goal was to make myself irrelevant in terms of selling comfrey. I want to get to the point where it is where you try to sell comfrey and people laugh at you. That's really the place I want to be. I want to get there because there is no herb that is more valuable to us, that does more for us in terms of feeding your animal, feeding your trees. I mean, it feeds everything on the homestead, and that's exactly why we were out there digging it. I mean, we're propagating this stuff. Folks, if you only knew how much we are putting this stuff in, because if the worst should happen, or when the worst does happen, however you choose to look at it, well, I can't just be putting back for myself. I got to be looking out for these animals. You know what? Do I have enough stockpiled forage? Can I get them through the winter without buying hay? Because who knows? Maybe you can't go anywhere. Be thinking about that stuff, y'all. This is why we talk about it. I was into preparedness long before I was into permaculture. Folks, we've been at this a long, long time. And the two do overlap. And I've been pretty big on that. So we got the sheep in the woods right now. And I'll tell you why that's significant, because it might mean a little something for a lot of you folks out there who are dealing with soil or dirt. Let's just say that you're dealing with dirt or something that was so abused and you're like, oh my goodness, where do I even start? Well, in this area in the woods where we have the sheep right now, we started on making it something of a silver pasture. There's still a fair amount of work to be done, but we opened up enough of the canopy where other things can be coming in. Now, up until this point, it's been almost entirely Chinese silver grass. And with good management, good grazing, it's being replaced by another noxious weed, some Japanese, I can't think of the name of it, but it's kind of taking the place right now. And that's the transition before we get to some real grass, okay? So that's really what's going on over there. But the reason I'm talking about this right now is it is the dead of summer. Should I be feeding hay right now? No. Not if you got something that's even halfway decent. No, you should not be feeding hay right now. So why am I feeding hay right now? It's because I'm not even feeding the sheep. They are barely even touching it. I mean, they'll knock it over. They're not eating it. I'm putting hay in each paddock to cover up the bare spots or cover up the areas where, you know, some, you know, I'm putting it in while they're in there, you know, doing their thing, their sheep thing. But it's in there to cover up the bare spots. And it's also like, okay, if the sheep do want to eat it because it doesn't have the best forage in the world, and I'm putting it in there as a backup. But more than anything, I'm not feeding sheep. And even when I'm feeding sheep, y'all, I'm feeding the soil. I'm a microbe farmer. And that's the way we all have to start looking at this stuff. And if you don't, I'm telling you, you're going to be on this hamster wheel where you're feeding hay nearly all year. Look, I know people that feed hay all year long. And 99% of the reason has to do with they got way too many animals on way too little pasture. And they don't know it. I've talked about it before. Homesteaders can be the best thing that ever happened to the land. But about, and more often than not, it's quite the opposite. I mean, everybody's scared and they're getting way more than you need. And you're not considering the fact that you are on this hamster wheel that you're never going to be able to get off. So just consider that. Like I said, I'm running them in the woods right now. And yeah, there's probably enough for them to eat out there. I got that there as a backup, but more than any, just to beat that point home, it is to feed the microbes. That is entirely what it's for. So let's see here. Okay, I'm working. Okay, tomorrow marks a new little milestone in my life. Now, people out there know that I'm something of a biohacker, and I've tried different things and done the 75 hard thing, done a lot of work on fasting, figured out that, you know what, if in a bind, you could go 3 days and still do all your chores. I've done those experiments. Now I'm trying something different, but I signed something of a non-disclosure agreement. I can't tell you what it is. I can't tell you the specifics. And I don't even want to tell you about it until I'm a little bit into this program. So it's something else entirely different, something I've never done before. And on the face of it, I got to be honest, man, I'll put it this way. The way I currently, Michelle and I both, I eat once or twice a day. That's about it. But I keep hearing from some of these other biohackers, not all of them, some of them disagree, but some of them suggest that you change up your eating regimen or your, let's say you're doing, for example, carnivore. Well, they say that you shouldn't stay with it forever. Other people say you should. Well, I'm playing with a lot of things right now, and I'm working with these other folks, and it's 180 degrees, so instead of eating maybe twice a day and doing a lot of fasting, well, there's no fasting, and I'm eating five times a day, sometimes six. And it's another thing altogether. I'm doing this for really a couple of reasons. I don't want to tell you what those are right now. But I wonder if this would be a pretty awesome healing modality for other people out there. Like I said, I've talked about fasting. I've talked about a lot of different things, grounding and all those other things. This is the latest stage. But anyway, it kicks off tomorrow, and it's going to go for like 102 days. So somewhere along the way, I'm probably going to reach out and let y'all know exactly what I'm doing and let you know what the progress is, because I've taken initial measurements and yeah, so we'll go from there, and I'll let you know what it turns out to be. Let's see here. Let me see. Michelle and I did something we don't often do. We went out to eat this weekend. How about that? And trying to smell some roses every once in a while, y'all, because really all we do is work. And it's when I say work, let me qualify that. What I do would be seen as work to the casual. If somebody were watching me, they'd say, man, that's just work all day long. Work, work, work. Well, what you see as work, I see as fun. Yeah, it's work to most people. But to me, regenerating soil and doing all the other really awesome things I'm doing out here, these experiments we're conducting, all these things are just, I mean, this is what wakes you up in the morning. I mean, this is exactly what I love to do with my life. But we decided to go ahead and go out to eat. And we tried to make it something, I guess you'd call it a date. I don't know. I guess you can call it that. I mean, we've been married almost 30 years, I think. Yeah, whatever. Call it whatever you want. But we went out to eat. And we've kind of made up our minds that if we are going to go out to eat, it's not going to be a restaurant where you look up at the menu. It's going to be a place where you look down at the menu, if you know what I mean. It ain't going to be asking, do you want fries with that? So I wouldn't say it's a highfalutin place, but there's a lot of good mom and pops out there, at least where we live. There's a lot of good mom and pops where it may be just a one or two person operation. It could even be a food truck. But I'm telling you what, they really care about the stuff they're doing. And every time we end up going to a place where they just have A, too many employees, or B, the owners aren't involved, you just get lousy everything. Basically, you're eating food that came off of a Cisco truck, you dig? So we decided that if we ever go out to eat, man, we're going to go to some place that at least has some decent reputation. And so we did. And anybody that knows, if I go out to eat, if there's fish on the menu and it's decent fish and it didn't come out of the ocean, yeah, sadly, I mean, I'll get fish every single time. Unless it's maybe on the East Coast. If it's salmon or something like that, man, I'm really, yeah, it's touch and go for me. But yeah, it's some really good sea bass. And yeah, it reminds me of that movie Dumb and Dumber, but or something like that. But anyway, has a really good sea bass, risotto. And it was just a really good experience. And then, you know, the best part about it, I got to be honest with you, it wasn't the two of us necessarily. It was the two of us spending time together. But honestly, there was this group of older folks, and two of them were celebrating their 56th anniversary. And there was a bunch of older folks around there with them. And then to sit there and watch them show up, they showed up there. They all had like gifts or, you know, something to drink and stuff like that. But I'll tell you, the thing that really stuck out to me more than anything is seeing the class and the dignity that these folks had just in the way they dressed. Every one of them, even though, I mean, other people are complaining about the heat up here, to me, it's never that hot, but they all show up. I mean, everybody's dining al fresco in this place. And so they all show up. The guys have jackets on, the ladies have dresses, and it just seemed a throwback, and it was just a joy to watch. And you couldn't help but overhear the conversation. In fact, at one point, one of the old guys came over and he's asking if I knew about this gas station that was converted into a restaurant. And I said, I think we're actually eating at it right at this present moment. And it was just a joy to see these folks. I'm well into their 70s and 80s, I think. It was just such a joy to see them and to see the dignity and the poise and the way they held themselves. And it just made me think at the same time that, boy, we've forgotten so much. And then almost to a certain extent, I felt a little bit embarrassed because 9 times out of 10, I'm wearing flip-flops and a t-shirt. But just like Shakespeare once again also said, the apparel oft proclaimed the man. So anyway, just gave me a lot to think about just looking at these folks over there and the dignity and the old school way of greeting. It was just really a throwback to my youth and truly something I hope we get back to. And maybe I need to start with me once again. Anyway, I don't even know why I told you that other than to say it was a joy to see. All right. So other stuff we got going on here. Well, this is kind of a big one. If you're into an orchard, a permaculture orchard, I was reminded by one of my heroes in the space, Stefan Subkowiak, to start training your trees. And he's right. He typically trains his in like August. Down here in the lower 48, man, you could, in most cases, if you have a tree like an apple, something, or really anything for the most part, if you're going to do any training on it right now, it's done growing for the season. Okay. It's not gonna, there's plenty of sap in there. So the branches are pliable. You want to wait until the branch is about a meter long, then you can start training it downward. Or let's say it's currently going upward and it's not something you're going to prune. Let's say you can't take it that far where you can get it started. That's a good way to get hopping and popping on some of this stuff. But you can start training your branches. In fact, I intend to do a Patreon video talking about that very, or actually demonstrating that very thing where, you know, work on the lower branches when it's younger. And then a couple of years later, maybe work on some of the other ones. So it calms your tree down. You keep 12 to 14 branches and you select the very best and they will produce the very best, especially if you want to stuff more into a smaller space. This is where training kind of comes in handy. Now, it's not absolutely necessary, but I kind of like it in some areas because I want these trees to be in a certain footprint. And it's really, really a big help to me. So, yeah, you can start your tree training. And like I said, on Patreon, I'll probably do a video almost certainly tomorrow. So be sure to check that out if you're interested. Let's see here. Well, yeah, I guess I could keep on going about the farm news, but man, I got to say, been trying, Michelle and I have been as of late. We work a lot. And from dawn till dusk, most days. And we're going to try, we usually take one day off, you know, Friday sundown till Saturday till sundown. And we try to kind of chill a little bit. But we ain't getting any younger either. So I'm going to try to at least take more of those little breaks throughout the day. Because, I mean, like I was explaining to her, look, you're working a 16-hour day a lot of times. So am I. If you were on a regular job, they would be calling the law on you because you don't take any breaks, and neither do I. And so having to eat only once or twice a day is helpful when you do a schedule like that. So try to look at those little challenges and changes that you can make in your life, and that's exactly what I'm trying to do in my own. I'll be honest with y'all. You get into a pattern of doing things, and then you might stop learning in a certain area. And so I've been doing this certain diet, you know, basically intermittent fasting pretty much every single day of the week. And then, you know, I'm going to change it up. So honestly, it's kind of exciting to be able to start a new chapter, and I'm looking forward to that. So I'll let y'all know how it goes. And when I'm able, I will let you know more about it. So coming up, Homesteaders United Jamboree, that's going to be August 29th through the 31st. Looks like a lot of people out there are very interested, especially advertisers. You better get in quick. So, you know, the date's coming on. It'll be upon us before you know it. What's really cool about this festival, we're going to be partially hosting it. And I'm really going to do classes that I really, really think people need in these times. And between the two classes that me and William are going to be doing, he's going to be in, by the way, if you don't know already, one of them is going to be a seriously, seriously comprehensive composting class. And it's not going to be two-dimensional. It's going to be three-dimensional. And what's cool about that is because part of what you need to know about composting requires your senses. And that's hard, very, very difficult to convey in a video. So you're going to be able, I'm going to have some finished compost so you know what it should look like. You know what it should smell like. There is a look it should have. There is a smell it should have. There is a feel it should have for really, really, really good compost. And you're going to be able to do that. Plus, I was thinking, okay, if I showed you how to make compost and you can do it at your home, guess what? You're not on that bandwagon to go out there and buy that stuff in a bag because it's all garbage anyway. Ask me how I know. We tested it. Another thing about this is that I'm like, okay, between that, Mike the Fit Farmer is going to be doing all the poultry, and I think it's going to be ducks and chickens. There's a lot of them too. So you're going to be able to get your hands dirty. And then I'm going to show you how to do a four-legged animal, and I'm going to show you a processing method. I don't know that I invented it, but I do know that it works no matter the animal. I don't care if you're processing a moose, a cow, or a goat, a pig. It doesn't matter. You can use the same exact methods. I'm going to show you on this. It works no matter the animal. So the idea is you come here, we fellowship, we have a great time, and then you leave so empowered that it's going to blow your mind. That's really our goal for this. For everybody that's involved, it's for you to leave so empowered that it's going to make your head spin. That's exactly what we're shooting for. That's exactly what we're going to make happen. So anyway, Homesteaders United Jamboree, August 29th through the 31st. That's why I spent more time on it because, yeah, you need to know these things. So get your tickets, y'all. Don't wait till the last minute. That's what a lot of people are doing. And there's going to have to be a cutoff point at some point because we got to let the chefs know how many people they're cooking for. So that's kind of where we are on that one. All right, with that, we're going to switch on into the good news. It used to be good news, bad news, but I like the fact that it's all good news now. So check this out. California senators pass Senate Bill 553 to prohibit retailers from stopping shoplifters. Y'all, I don't know what the exact numbers were exactly, but it was somewhere that if you stole under $1,000, like if you stole $999 or less, that basically they got to let you get away with it. Folks, this is lunacy. I mean, this is madness. I don't even know what else to call it. And I'm not laughing because I think it's funny. I can't even believe that a bill has to be imposed to tell store owners, hey, it's okay to stop somebody that is stealing your property. I mean, what kind of world are we living in, y'all? But I'm calling this good news because this is exactly what's going to have to happen. For anything worthwhile to change, that is exactly what's going to happen. People are going to have to get fed up, and it has to get so bad. When you hit this level of depravity in a society, history proves that only the crucible of really hard times fixes these kinds of ills. So I'm going to call that a plus. All right, so the next one, Dr. Brian Artis. I'm a big fan of that dude. People shouldn't worry about the bird flu scare. Okay, the reason why Dr. Artis is saying this, he was in a recent podcast as of late, and he was talking about, there's a documentary out there, I think it was funded by Stu Peters, but he was basically the cat's meow in this thing. It was called Watch the Water. And in a nutshell, I'm not going to do it any justice, but in a nutshell, what they're claiming is the reason that, number one, this thing through a respiratory virus was never the means by which it was transmitted. I'm talking the sweet and sour sniffles. It never happened that way. It happened, according to him, through the water supply, and that's how everybody got it. Sure, it's funny that Danny and Wanda didn't get it at all. They're on a well system down there. But I would be curious at how many other... I think they use multiple vectors to do it. But anyway, Dr. Artis is saying, you need to worry less about what's floating in the air and worry more about what's floating in your water. And so I'm going to call that good news because, look, you're one step closer to being more empowered regarding this stuff. Plus, there's a number of products out there that can kind of make you a little bit bulletproof on some of this. Now, I'm going to go back to some of the work of Dr. Artis. If you go to the drartisshow.com, you can go over there, and if you scroll down, he has a video. There's a series of videos there. One of them is called The Other N-Word, okay? And he's talking about nicotine and how, I mean, good night. By the time you're done with that thing, you'll be something of an expert on nicotine and how nicotine is not addictive. Yeah, I know you might be, just turn it off. No, it's not addictive. And he proves it with, I mean, he makes an unimpeachable case that nicotine is not at all addictive. What's addictive, that's why all the cigarette tobacco giants, when they were in front of Congress, when they were asked, is nicotine addictive? They said, no, nicotine is not addictive. It isn't. It's in all kinds of food. It's in most of your nightshades. It's what they add. It's the chemicals they put in there that make it addictive. If you doubt me, go back and watch that. I think it was called The Insider with Russell Crowe, where they added the nicotine is not at all addictive. It's the crap they put in it that makes it addictive. Anyway, he makes a case that for all they were out there, Fauci and all the other polecats out there were telling everybody stop smoking or you're going to get COVID and die. Well, it turns out the smokers almost never caught COVID. Anybody that used any tobacco products almost never got it because those receptors for this bioweapon that our government made, these receptors bind to the nicotine receptors in your body. And if they're not filled up already, well, then they take that spot and then you wind up with COVID. And that's the work that I'm like I said, I'm not going to do it any justice, but he makes an incredible case that it has absolutely nothing to do with tobacco in and of itself, which is part of the reason people were asking me about it. I was on an interview with John from SOE and Nicole at Living Free in Tennessee. I was doing a live stream with them a while back, and I barely got into it a little bit, and I told people that one of the experiments I'm doing right now is making my own smokeless tobacco for precisely that reason. Is that, and I've been experimenting with it for quite a while now. I just haven't told anybody in a real major way publicly, where you can actually titrate with honest chemicals, where I'm just taking the tobacco leaf and I'm processing it in a very natural kind of way that imitates fermentation. And I'm trying it and I'm using it and I'm finding out, you know, hey, this stuff ain't like Copenhagen. It ain't like Skoll. It ain't like the other stuff out there. If you try this stuff, it's totally different, but I'm not willing to come out and, you know, tell you everything just yet because who even knows? I'll put it this way. There's a guy I know named Galen. He works for Earthship. and he smokes real tobacco cigarettes, it smells nothing like a regular cigarette, not even close. In fact, it's almost appealing, the smell of it. It's like pipe tobacco, you know. I don't know what they do to that stuff in particular, but this stuff kind of had the same effect. It was more of a soothing effect than anything. But anyway, I said all that. I know I spent a little time on that, but the point being in that what I want you to really take away from this is examine this stuff for yourself. Go check out Dr. Artis. Go check out the other N-word video. And then you might, just like my, I think I made a pretty convincing case to my chiropractor that he's out there buying 21 milligram. I'm pretty sure this dude is doing it. He's buying nicotine patches and he's putting them on himself based on the information that he found from there. So you're never going to hear that on the mainstream media, but go check it out for yourself. Do your own examination, do your own study and find out. All right. So the last one, and I'm going to call this good news. It's going to, once again, it's going to seem a little bit weird, but this article says nearly every FBI and CIA staged catastrophe has one thing in common. You know what that is, folks? Yep. Some of you out there, you know exactly what it is. And here, I'll go ahead and drop it. There's never any recorded security footage showing the murder or the preparation thereof. Yeah. Did you know that? I mean, just a small list. I mean, first of all, 9/11 at the Pentagon, the most secure building on the planet, and they show you a tail. I mean, come on, man. First of all, the official story is garbage. You're telling me this guy, with nothing more than training in a simulator, did a maneuver that no Top Gun pilot was ever able to replicate. He did a corkscrew turn with a 747, landed, just happened to land in the one part of the Pentagon where all the records were kept for all the trillions that were missing that Rumsfeld was talking about. But you know what? No pictures of it. You know what? Sandy hoax. Oh, I'm sorry. Sandy Hook. Yep. Check out the work of Wolfgang Halbig, and you'll find out that is the biggest joke ever. Nobody died there. In fact, he wrote a book called Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, or maybe it was Jim Fetzer that wrote that book. And they make a case that you can't even argue. And I love when that happened. All the teachers I know somebody at Sandy Hook. I'm like, yeah, who were they? Yeah. You just happen to know somebody. The school wasn't even occupied, but that's another story altogether, but check it out. No camera footage. How about the Batman theater shooting? Everybody got a phone these days, but nobody got any of that. Here's one, and it's very close to my heart because I grew up there, and that's the Oklahoma City bombing. Somehow, some way, every bit of footage regarding Oklahoma City came up missing. Nobody can find it. Park school shooting. Yeah. And then now the Trump assassination attempt. All the buildings, all the cameras on the buildings just happened to go down. Sound like a bunch of coincidences to you? Folks, I don't find this stuff funny at all, but look, the only thing sometimes the only thing I have left is my sense of humor, because I don't even know how anybody can believe any of this stuff. If anybody in your life came up with that many of coincidences, you would mark them as a liar. But because it's your government, you just dismiss it. And folks, that's a very short list, by the way. There is a bunch of others out there. Same exact thing. All right. I'm going to quit belaboring that. And with that, we're going to go to my man, Eric Sider.
Hey, Eric Sider here with your PimpCast tip of the day. Today's tip, how much change is necessary? Most people would acknowledge that we need a change in how we currently operate on the planet. The amount or degree of change is up for debate. In my opinion, and most people who see the world through a permaculture lens, we need massive change. In fact, we probably can't even imagine what a fully permaculture designed world would look like. The generations that grow up with permaculture will be able to see further and further into that future. But change must happen. The only question is what the transition looks like. Most of the issues in the world can be attributed to how we provide our needs. That starts with food production. But the scale of operation is a big part of the issue. Simply transitioning all industrial food production to regenerative agriculture would still have all the same issues from the supportive industries. Bill Mollison always said, figure out how little you need first before designing a system to provide those needs. We need to return all food production to where we live. Every settlement should provide the basic needs of its inhabitants, or you inevitably exploit other people or ecosystems. Large-scale centralized systems only serve to benefit those in control. They are actually inefficient and exploitive and vulnerable to attack. Small-scale, diverse, and distributed systems are the only sensible approach to a world in chaos. As Bill Mollison says, permaculture as a design system contains nothing new. It arranges what was always there in a different way, so that it works to conserve energy or to generate more energy than it consumes. What is novel and often overlooked is that any system of total common sense design for human communities is revolutionary. You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Eric Sider, and if you're in need of permaculture t-shirts or remote permaculture consultation and design, head over to ericsider.com.
Bam, that's my dog right there, boy, hitting it out of the park once again. Well, it's funny that he brings up the very, like I said, I'd never know what Eric's going to say until I hear him say it on this podcast. I intentionally do not listen because I want an honest reaction to it. And it's curious how many doggone times where he's saying something that kind of foreshadows or echoes something that was already said. Like I talked about the change a minute ago in terms of my diet and, you know, stuff like that. You got to have that change. But also when it comes to these permaculture systems, there's really nothing to add what he's already saying there. And one of the most, boy, Bill Mollison had a real awesome way of putting this stuff together to where it's all there. It's just ordering it in the way that it should be ordered. And once again, that goes back to one of the biggest conundrums that we see within the people that are getting into this space is that it's ready, fire, aim, and you really got to slow down and think about what it is you're doing. What are your goals? Are those goals going to shift? I mean, what does that look like? So I might be covering a little bit of that in the main topic as well. All right, y'all. EMP Shield, $50 off with promo code PERMA. Been a journeyman electrician for 27 years, y'all. EMP Shield did not reach out to me. Neither did Redemption Shield, which, by the way, I forgot to mention them earlier. In either case, whether it's Redemption Shield, whether it's a grounding mat or anything grounding at all associated there, you'll get 10% off at Redemption Shield, but EMP Shield will get you $50 off. Now, here's what I love so much about their products. Number one, they came out with that micro as of late, and there are some huge developments going on with EMP Shield in terms of who they're teaming up with, and people are really starting to take notice of how important this stuff is, not just for EMP Shield, but most importantly, look at your biggest threat. Remember I talked a bit ago about that 50-meter target and the 250? Well, your biggest threat is lightning. And should lightning hit your house and get past that EMP shield, you get covered for 25 G's. That's why they didn't reach out to me. I reached out to EMP Shield because they got the best in the market. Take it from me, Billy, 27-year IBEW journeyman electrician. IBEW does not at all endorse my comments here. I didn't ask them to. I'm just telling you those are my qualifications. And I got a lot of experience doing industrial and commercial work. That's basically all I've ever done in the electrical field. Never so much. Well, some are residential, but believe me, I know what I'm talking about on those levels, especially. So $50 off with promo code PERMA. Okay. Here's the main topic today. Bear with me because I'm going to say, when is it time to give up? I mean, it. At what point, and this was inspired by several discussions I've had as of late. Don't want to say who it was or what it was about with any specificity because I don't want to put those people on blast in terms of what these things entail. But we all, if you're listening to this podcast, you are either engaged in some sort of farm operation or, and like I said, if you're growing mushrooms in your closet, just like Joel says, you are a farmer. Okay, so don't think about the fact, oh, I need 100 acres and all this and a tractor. No, you don't. If you're growing microgreens in a spare bedroom, you are a farmer. Okay? You're producing any food. In fact, you know what? If you're guerrilla gardening out there, you are a farmer. So let's just get that straight right off the bat. But when is it time to give up on certain things? Okay, so you come up with this design. Let me kind of scoot back in my chair a little bit because this program might go a little bit long today, but this is important. So you design this homestead, okay? And you, let's just say it's got a house there, or you built a house there. And let's say you got a little bit of a cattle operation going on. You got some chickens, you got this, you got that. But then somewhere along the way, you realize, as we have, the cattle don't necessarily fit your landscape. Too many times people are so in love with the idea, or you're so married to it, that you don't pivot. I can't begin to tell you how important that is. We brought Coco the bull out here because he was a Dexter, and we were hoping that he would manage this steep terrain better than typical cattle would, because even though there are people around us running cattle, they're not running cattle in areas that are this steep. And if they are, it is absolutely decimating the environment for two reasons. Number one, they're not rotating their animals at all, or the steepness of the slope and the weight of those animals is just dislodging. Unlike you got a 1,000-pound animal on a relatively flat pasture, you know, the impact isn't that awful. But when you have it in a steep environment, it is creating stress on that soil. So you got to ask yourself, do cows fit this environment? For us, the answer was a resounding no, because there were parts that were so doggone steep, even though a sure-footed animal like that, there was too great a risk of having that animal break a leg. I mean, or if for it to get excited in a thunderstorm, being on a very extreme slope, breaking a leg, and then, you know, then you got real problems. Because not only, I mean, depending on where this animal broke its leg, you got to ask yourself, how am I going to get it off this mountain? Which is a whole different variety of problems. So at a certain point, we had to say, you know what? Cattle just don't work in this environment. I mean, it could. It just doesn't work for us. Not here. Not on this place. The risk was too great, so we gave it up. Okay, other examples. So look, there's a whole lot going to be said here. Hopefully I can make it make sense. Okay, so there are a number of people out there that have started orchards. And to a certain extent, maybe I'm responsible for helping to inspire you to do that. Now, one of the big reasons why I've talked about doing an orchard is it's passive food production, for crying out loud. I mean, I'm not looking at the orchard in an isolation type environment. All of your systems should have interactions with the things around it. So even within our orchard systems, our animals, to some extent or another, do have a level of involvement. And as the trees get bigger and bigger, well, they'll have more of a level of involvement, at least the sheep and the chickens and stuff. Right now, I don't want them in there in certain spots because they're not resilient enough to put up with the impact. But prime example out here on this property. Folks, I would not have an orchard if I didn't come up with a way of making bone sauce that made sense. Because there were every single tree I put in the ground, man, the deer were killing me. And there ain't no waiting out all night and just killing them. I mean, they'll just come back after a while. There was no keeping them out of here for me to even have an orchard. So if I didn't have the bone sauce, sticking with the orchard system, unless you were to employ a full-time dog that is going to run those sheep off every time they come, or run those deer off every time they come around, just didn't make any sense at all. So an orchard may not be your best bet. Or like Jack Spirko says, maybe it is your best bet. And that orchard just made you a deer garden. So yeah, deer's out there eating your stuff. Well, you might want to be eating that deer. But it may be an idea for you to pivot and say, okay, maybe the orchard doesn't work well for me because all of a sudden now I'm working 7 days a week, working out of town, got laid off, got to work out of town. Now maybe that orchard makes its transition into a food forest. Maybe that's what you got to do simply because you can't manage it. That is one of the benefits of a food forest is it does still require management, but nowhere near, as a person that runs them both, nowhere near the extent that an orchard does, not if you want it to be highly productive. So it does require more management, but still, even the most high maintenance orchard of 100 trees requires less management than one cow. I'm dead serious. If you were to add up all the time you got to put in to look after an orchard compared to all the time over a year you got to look after a cow, there's no comparison. So maybe because of circumstances, you got to give up on that orchard. You got to make your way into a food forest. What about other gardening methods? This is one that I know people are really going to lose their minds about. There's people out there that love to put in mandala gardens, but they don't make a whole lot of sense for high-end food production. They might be pretty, they might have their place in certain areas, but by and large, for heavy food production, that's not what you want. So maybe it's time to give up on that. Maybe just reform your whole idea and go with lines and rows, because that does work in an annual setting. That's a big one right there. Or maybe you're using, okay, this is a big one right here. So there's a lot of people that have come to this podcast, and up until now, you've been using all of the garden variety stuff you buy out of a store for fertilizer. We've been imploring everybody, stay away from that junk. Even if it means for a year or two, you don't have the kind of production you'd like, because you could produce all the fertility you need through composting. Dead serious. And for also preparedness reasons, in addition to permaculture reasons, it just makes good sense. And I told that story over and over about all the farmers when Ukraine first kicked off, all the farmers that were losing their ever-loving minds. I'm talking mild-mannered guys that were cussing out the clerk down at the local farm store because now the fertilizer that they're accustomed to using for their corn all of a sudden is triple the price. So you might want to think about different methods. Folks, I saved the most important for last. And like I said, this is by no means a comprehensive list, but it is important. Maybe it's time to give up on certain people in your life. Like I stated in the beginning of part, maybe it's time that you give up on looking at things or looking for a national savior to get in there and straighten things out. Maybe it's time to give up on that. Are there people in your life? How many times have you heard me talk about, you know what, if I got a sheep jumping the fence, he's going, you know, if he does it more than a couple of times, you're going to have to go in the freezer because I can't have you training the others to do that very same thing. If I got a rooster that's violent, in the pot you're going to go. You got a dog that's killing your chickens. They can't stick around. You can't have them. So why on earth do we tolerate bad behavior in what should be high-functioning human beings? But that's the one area in our lives that people are so reluctant to prune out. People that you know are taking advantage of you, but they stick around because they're family, maybe. Them being family doesn't necessarily make them good for you. Trust me, I could write a book on that. It's not just that. Maybe these are friends that you've had ever since childhood. You have these great aspirations. You have these dreams, and they're doing everything in the world to try to keep you from achieving that. Maybe you prune those people out of your life, or maybe they just kind of prune themselves out once you decide to make that change. That was a lesson I learned from John Willis, and it's true. A lot of these people self-prune out of your life once you are no longer, once they see that your energy vibration has ascended to another level, they kind of prune themselves out of your life. I'm not trying to get all metaphysical here, but what I'm saying is when I run into a lot of my old army buddies, there comes a point where I realize our paths are greatly there's such a divergence that you realize, okay, the me they know is a person that no longer exists. Here's one of the big ones, y'all. And I got to be real careful about how I say this one. You know, there's a whole lot of guys out there that went looking for a homestead honey, and you found yourself a homestead huzzy. Or all you ladies out there thought you were going to find some guy that wants to, you know, hack it out of the wilderness with you, and then you find out this dude is more polished than spit and more glitter than grit. Now, if it's your boyfriend or some regular relationship, then maybe you want to prune them out. I'm just saying. Now, marriage is something else altogether. I mean, this is why it pays to do your due diligence. But honestly, it's time to give up on certain people. And I've had to do this in my life, and it's been tough. It has been tough. Some people recently, where they create, like Eric talked about a minute ago with the food forest or any permaculture system, where it's producing more than it requires. Well, I require the same thing of my relationships with the people I know. I like to think, and I know, and I am trying on a constant basis to be a greater blessing to the people I know. Then I want to be the consummate food forest, okay? That's exactly what I want to be. I want to be a person that bestows more blessing than what I require, that needs no upkeep, that needs minimal pruning or little upkeep. I'm not going to say none, but very little. That's the kind of person I desire to be the person who's trying to offer that word of encouragement. Try to be that person. I'm trying as best I can to be this person. But if you have a person that needs constant coddling, is always complaining, whatever the case may be, then maybe it's time to just give up. I spent time on that, y'all, because honestly, like I said, there's some certain things in my life. I can't tell you everything, but there are people that have had to be on the chopping block because they are something of a soul suck. And we all got them. And a lot of them are family. I mean, let's be honest here. So, folks, hopefully that's a blessing to you. With that said, I'm going to go straight into the Q&A. But, yeah, there is a time to give up on certain things. I mean, just because you went out there and you put in a certain system at your place doesn't mean you need to follow it to the end. That's why you observe in permaculture. If it was a great idea on paper and then in reality you find out this was better in the brochure, then it's time to pivot and go to another place. But also consider those people in your life where you love them, you wish them the best, but you got to go. All right. So right off, Q&A. Let's see here. This one's from David. Love hearing from David. He says, hey, brother, you and your wife are one of a kind. Where can I buy the Perma Pastures Farm t-shirt? And I can wear it to the famous Harold's Corral Bar in Cave Creek, Arizona. Much respect for all the great work you do. For the USA, thank you. Well, thank you so much, David. Right now, we don't have any shirts available. That's something we're going to probably have to remedy here before long. But we are really up to our eyeballs in so many things right now that it's all we can do just to keep the shirts on our backs, to be honest with you. Rodney sent me this one here. He says, Billy, if you have time to watch the John Rich and Tucker Carlson interview, John tells Tucker and his audience about Darby, Schofield, spiritual warfare, and Jesus' second coming. I've got to definitely check that out. I read that and I was like, oh my goodness, man. That's actually getting out there. I mean, because for all the people that are, if you want to know more about this or hear the definitive work on the subject, check out my man Scipio Eruditus regarding all this. Pastor Chuck Baldwin, he does a great job of it too. Y'all, I was raised within this realm, and I'm realizing now, good night, man. This guy that wrote the Schofield Study Bible was a complete polecat. If you doubt me, go back, listen to what Scipio, in the interview that I just recently did with Scipio Eruditus, man. You will be glad you did. All right, so my friend Steven here, I got to meet him at the Mountain Readiness thing, and I don't know how much of this he wants me to get into, but in a nutshell, but basically, his life is changing. His wife basically got a job offer, it seems, down in Florida. They currently live in Maryland. And he calls it the People's Republic of Maryland. I don't have any doubts on that. It's kind of crazy that the American Revolution was fought in that area. And look what that Massachusetts and all the other New England, look what that's all become as of late. So, he's asking for the prayers and folks, that's what we do. We pray for y'all. We really do. It looks like he may have a 14-acre rural homestead down there. And he's had some problems with some of the stuff that's going on at his place. And honestly, man, you talk about hellhounds being put on a person's trail, man. He sent me pictures of a car that got jacked up. He and his son, man, they would have died if they had been in the tent at Mountain Readiness when a random crazy tree just fell right on their tent. It's crazy. But yeah, they've had some weird stuff as of late go on, and it's good to see. I know that pendulum swings both ways. So, Stephen, just keep me abreast of what's going on, and Let me know if there's anything we can do to help. But right now, y'all, for each other and all of us, we need to be praying for one another, y'all. And I mean the fervent prayers of a righteous man availeth much. And we need, in fact, Michelle and I were in a prayer session today for about 2 hours. And can't even begin to tell y'all all the difference it makes. It really does. When people say it's the least I can do, no, it's all you can do. And it's the most you can do also. So I've got another one here from Ken. He says, we received your bones office and thank you very much. Well, Ken, I thank you and yours. Thank you for spending the time and effort in making this product as well as all the wisdom and knowledge from you and your family's YouTube channels. Thank you. Once again, I'm trying to be the friend I talked about a little bit ago, y'all. I'm trying, and Michelle and William, all of us are trying to be the consummate permaculture orchard. I'm trying to put out good stuff on YouTube and in the prayers that it gets to the people that really need it, because we are in a homesteading tsunami, but YouTube is doing a really good job of suppressing anybody out there in the YouTube space that's trying to teach people real life skills. So anyway, he says, I grew up on a farm before I left the military. I believe I still have that farmer's curiosity, work ethic, and hope for the future that my grandpa or grandfather instilled in me as I watched him and helped him manage a small cattle farm. And folks, that's exactly where we got to get back to. And folks, I thank y'all, because if it weren't for you, I wouldn't have a YouTube channel. I wouldn't have this platform. I wouldn't be able to speak at conferences and do all these things. I mean, it is truly an honor and a pleasure to be in this place. And the thing that scares me is that, how do I say this? As people ascend up the ladder, whether it be in social media or whatever the case, man, I could provide a long list of people that seem to move to the next level and they lose their soul in the process, it seems. That success somehow, or what they view as success, has poisoned their minds and their hearts to a certain extent. And I'm praying that I remain humble despite all of this, that I keep learning, that I keep pushing, pushing the envelope and doing all that I can to try to evangelize this information out there. It can be something of a frustration because you know that the powers that shouldn't be don't want everybody out there knowing how to do this stuff. And so they are really putting the brakes on channels that are encouraging people to get into this life. We are in the middle of a homesteading tsunami, but you would never know it with some of the stuff that's happening in social media. So we just pray y'all that you please pray for us that the information, like I said, I don't care if I get a million subscribers. I care about the right ones, ones where we can build a community, where we meet from time to time and do the wonderful things. And I'm just praying, y'all, that I just continue to stay humble along the way and that I continue and never forget that whatever business I do is a byproduct of doing good, solid work. That's the way I look at it. And if anybody ever tells me that's a lousy business plan, well, it's what it's going to have to be, because I don't know anything else and I don't want to know anything else. It's going to have to be a byproduct of doing good work and doing and living by the golden rule. All right. So Megan says, hello, watched your video of putting the highway guards to prevent driveway erosion or gullies. Did it work? Hoping to find out how that ended up. Well, they worked great. They did. And to a certain extent, they still do. The problem is we should put in more of them, and we're hoping to do that soon. We're hoping to be able to add more. The problem is that at the time they do well in a regular rain event, but we need to, I think we got five of them out there right now. I need to add at least another three, I think, at the very minimum. And then there would be almost no erosion out there, I think. I mean, the people that did this driveway did a lousy job of it. Didn't slope it right, didn't really do anything right. It rides in the gullies, then goes down and drags everything with it. So might have to do some earthworks. Actually, that's in the works. But yes, they work great. And there's other people around us in these mountains that are doing the very same thing. It'll blow your mind how well it does work. So yeah, absolutely. So we got one from Alexis and Kyle. So I met them at Mountain Readiness, and it was a real joy to meet them. Yes, I do remember you. Anyway, they make quite an awesome, wonderful impression on people. Anyway, they just acquired two Yorkshire pigs today, and they put them in the first paddock in the woods. And they sent me a video of it, and I wish I could somehow convey this video, but I'm looking at that paddock. I'm looking at these pigs. Of course, they just got them home, and they're in the dog crate near as I can tell. And that's typical. When they make a trip like that, they're not just going to walk out of that cage. They're going to sit there. They're going to mope for a minute. They're going to figure out what's up. They're going to get hungry, and then they're going to explore. So just remember, when you're dealing with pigs, I should have told Alexis this. So if you're listening, please, you need to train those pigs, because unlike other animals, when they get shocked, when their wet noses hit polywire or something like that, most animals will recoil. Pigs are different. They're programmed to run through it. So typically, you got to be careful there, because 9 times out of 10, when pigs, you want to train them for a few days where they have an immovable barrier on the other side. This is a trick I actually learned from Joel Salatin, is they're going to want to push through it. But they're so smart that after they get zapped a couple of times, they'll start to realize, oh, shoot, I need to recoil. So just be careful with that. They're small enough. I saw them in there where they may not have the problem, but you usually want to make a smaller. I usually put them in a barn for a little while or a couple of days. And with that last batch of pigs, they had worms in them, so I had to give them ivermectin. So they had to stay in the barn for a long, long time before I ever put them up in the woods. That was at the height of COVID, y'all. You couldn't find pigs anywhere at the time. So, yeah, you want to put them in a place where, let's say, you put fencing on the other side of it where they hit that, and then they try to run through it. They realize they can't, and then they back off. They do that a couple of times, folks. That is a big, big, awesome tip. So just keep that in mind when you get brand new pigs. If they're not trained to hot wire, then that's one way to do it. All right. So, yeah, here's one here. Melinda says, my son is a 25-year-old active duty Marine. He is interested in purchasing land once he's done with his duty in a year. We live in Dickinson, Texas. I see what you are doing and would love to come and basically they want to come visit. How do you choose where you live? We are prone to extreme weather, everything in our area, tornadoes, hurricanes, flooding, droughts, mosquitoes. Yeah, I lived in that area. I know that place very, very well. In fact, William, our son, is actually running our other farm back in East Texas right now in a little town called DeKalb. So yeah, I'm well aware. I grew up in Oklahoma as well. So we didn't have the hurricanes, but believe me, tornadoes. I was there on that May 3rd tornado. I was there in it, and we survived. William was just a little sprout at the time. But what should we be looking for? Thank you for taking the time to share what you know. And it's great. You're always so encouraging. Well, thank you so much, Melinda. Okay. So first of all, your son, I'm glad he's getting out. And I hope nobody else is signing up. I'll be really honest with you. That being said, and I'm saying that from the position of a soldier myself. So, I mean, for anybody saying, well, you don't know. Yeah, I know a little bit about it. As far as coming for a visit, we really can't manage any of that right now. We're trying to acquire the land on each side of us so we can have something of a parking area, because we just can't get enough people out here. We'd love to do, you know, walking tours and showing you how a food forest, you know, what that looks like, what an orchard looks like, what swales look like, and how they all integrate with one another. I'll be honest with you. I suggested it a couple of weeks ago, Melinda. You and anybody else that's into this, I would seek a permaculture consultant in your area. Now, my son just happens to be in that area. He's the permaculture. Go to YouTube, look up permaculture consultant on YouTube, and you should be able to find his contact information. He's down there right now, could probably help you out. Now, I can only give you the high points over something like this. Okay, so why did I choose where I live? Number one, when we picked our place in Texas, it was the only land I could afford at the time, and it was land nobody wanted. It was messed up from the feet up. And being permaculture designers, we knew that no matter the area, we could straighten it out. And honestly, it's part of the reason why I live where I do right now. Many, 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 many people looked at this place and they did not want to touch it with a 10-foot pole, because the animals that they had here, way more cows that should have been out here, they basically decimated the entire mountainside. And it was so doggone steep that nobody in their right mind would want to mess with it. So we saw it as a challenge. So that's why we chose it. But also the other reasons which we chose it, and your son, the Marine, will know this. I'm not sure what his MOS is, but almost certainly he's probably going to have some understanding about this. I chose this area because it is, in fact, a temperate rainforest. That's why we chose North Carolina. Number one, water comes easy in a place like this. And that's a big deal. It is a very, very big deal. Water access structures. You can switch those around to some extent, but that's essentially it. So water comes easily in a place like this. Unlike many parts of Texas where in where we lived, it wasn't uncommon to go months without a drop of rain. So water comes easy. Number two, I wanted to be somewhere around 3,000 feet because I know I'm high enough to avoid the humidity, yet low enough to still keep the fertility. That was big. Also, at that altitude, I can wear a t-shirt for most of the year, even in the winter. So it's like a beautiful, I mean, where you are in Texas, and I know this very well, it's either winter or summer. You don't have any spring. You don't have any fall for the most part. It is either hot or cold. And because of the high humidity down there, I kid you not, I was colder in the low country in North Carolina. I was colder in Texas than I was at 70 below in Alaska. I kid you not. Because the air was dry up there. But down there, the humidity will cut right through you. I don't care how many clothes you have on. It's just how it works. But it will help if you have animal fiber. But anyway, it's defendable. That's another thing I look for. And I'm going to, and hopefully over the next year, be able to work on a book where I'm talking a great deal about a lot of this stuff. I want it high ground. Is it defendable? Do I have minimal roads leading to me? Those are from a tactical standpoint. Do I have four seasons? Because that is a plus in some areas. Where you are, you got droughts, you got tornadoes. That's why I would seriously seek the advice of a permaculture consultant in your area, because I'll tell you what, they're probably going to recommend for you. I've not been to Dickinson, Texas, but I would almost probably guarantee that they're going to recommend swales and lots of them for a bunch of reasons. Number one, it's a tree growing system on steroids. Number two, it's going to recharge your aquifers. Number three, in those high rain events, you're going to remember when you get energy on your place, you can either capture it for a little while, you can deflect it, or you can amplify it. And in the best cases, you can do all three. So that's what you're going to want to do. Figure out how to store most of that water down into your soil, refill your aquifers, all those things. As far as hurricanes and stuff like that, well, you know, you're going to have building structures down there that are, as far as tornadoes and stuff like that, you're going to have, well, tornadoes and hurricanes. I'm going to throw them under the same thing. When you're having a rain event that either one of those might bring, especially a hurricane, you're going to have a designer that is going to prepare for your 100,000-year event. Your water event. They're going, if they do their jobs properly, they're going to do earthworks on your property that prepare you for events exactly like that. Okay. So that's important too. Droughts. Well, I just kind of covered that a minute ago when it comes to the swales and stuff like that. You're going to want to bank as much of that water down into your soil as you possibly can. And you're going to want to do really good management practices because for every 1%, I say it all the time, for every 1% of organic matter that you put down in the soil, that's the equivalent of an Olympic-sized swimming pool per acre of water that you're storing in the soil. So you know what that means? So when everybody else's grass is dying because you've had a drought for months on end, yours doesn't have to be. But that comes down to a management issue as well. Man, there's so much more. But all I can do, because what you're asking is, you're asking what you need are more specific answers than I can provide without having seen it. But those are some of the big things that I look for. Like I said, is it defendable? Do I have water? Routes. There are things that I'm thinking about as a permaculture designer that soldiers would only think about, Marines would only think about. So also think about getting a permaculture design certificate yourself, y'all. School of Permaculture has one for as little as $25 a month. I don't get anything out of that. Every dime, whatever commission I get out of that, you know what? It goes to rescue children. I'm dead serious. So I highly recommend them because you can do that online too, but it is also information that's invaluable. I spent a lot of time on that, y'all, because it's that important. It really is. All right. So let's see here. Michael, I can't go through all of this, but in a nutshell, He was listening to the podcast number 202, where I was talking about spiritual warfare, and he's talking about how, you know, some people would put holy water out there and they would find out whether or not somebody had some bad juju going on, whatever the case may be. But he also, I won't go into any details, but his wife and he are going through some, you know, some serious health concerns right now. And I know a lot of other people are as well. Folks, we pray for you. We do. And Michael, your wife, we're praying for you guys as well. We're praying for everybody out there because this stuff is real and it's going to get realer as time goes on. But you don't have to be afraid. You don't have to go in a hidey hole. You don't have to worry yourself to death. Y'all go out here, do the basic things, but put on that full armor of God at the same time. Y'all, I mean it. If nothing else, what we've gone through in that whole spiritual warfare, I know the intent of the people. I think I know the intent. Well, obviously the intent of the people who did a lot of this stuff to us is to create harm. But well, all you did was drive me closer into the arms of my Lord and Savior. That's what you did. And so for a lot of you other folks out there that are dealing with stuff like this, this is why I'm saying right now, especially in these times, we have got to be on our knees more than ever. We got to be asking the Almighty to just put that hedge of protection around ourselves and the people we love and all of you folks out there, because honestly, whether you know it or not, there's a whole, every time I go to every single festival, I'll tell you what I come across. I come across a lot of other people that feel at this festival that we're essentially on the aisle of misfit toys. It really feels that way with so many people because you realize that you don't necessarily have that community at home. It may be under your own roof where your spouse or your girlfriend or boyfriend or your mom or dad or whatever, nobody else gets it. But you're in the company of a bunch of other people who are equally marginalized, and we all congregate in these areas to be able to have community, if just for a day or two. And so, folks, this is why I recommend that we go out here as often as you can. You don't necessarily have to go to my festival, but I would highly suggest you do because it is my goal to make sure you are trained. And then in addition to that, where we're not so filled up with so many other people out there where you don't feel like you can ever get any questions answered. That's exactly why we came up with the festival we did. That's why we're asking you folks, go out there. I know it costs a little bit of money, but we got to pay these chefs. Homesteaders United Jamboree, August 29th through the 31st. And this is where you feel like you have community. You're going to make friends. And we're going to get to hug each other. We're going to have a lot of great interaction with one another. And this is where it starts, y'all. But we have got to be praying for one another. All right, y'all. Hopefully all of this was a blessing to you. Until next time, stay alert, stay alive.
All our speech is the word. Now I gotta get up in the morning.